We discussed the uniqueness of this scripture. The background on which it is told and what is the prime focus of this, to whom it is told. The truth is to be told to people according to their capacity of reception. People are capable of receiving, it is told. So, we have to see for whom this scripture is meant. And the wonderful thing that we find here, and that has been pointed out by many great commentators, that the focus of this wonderful scripture is not a man doing worship, not a person who is meditating, but a man right in the midst of tremendous activity. And it therefore appeals to us immediately. We are continuously at work. We are working all the time. And we feel that this work creates a lot of bondages for us. We want that work should be beneficial to us. The work must be a big force in our life to transform it. Bhagavad Gita points out this wonderful feature of our action, which is normally overlooked. We perform an action to bring about a result or change the condition outside. like, say, I want to construct a building. A big edifice is to be erected. Now, I put in lot of efforts, years after years, maybe it may take planning and execution, getting money and all the aspects of the construction are taken care of. And one day, a beautiful edifice is built there. Now, this is the external change. Outside one change, there was no building and a building has now sprung up. External change has taken place. But while this work was being done, while my hands were working, my brain was working, while the change outside was taking place, unconsciously my personality also was getting molded. I was getting trained. The character was getting formed. This is the important aspect of work which is usually overlooked. Because our mind is, or our sight, our attention is always on some external things. And thus, we miss this important effect of work. The effect of work on the worker, on the character of the worker. We see, of course, the other effects of work on the worker, like I get tired, I require rest, I get into so many problems because of the work. All these other aspects we notice, but these are, although on the worker, they are kind of external. What is pointed out in this is how this very work, it goes to mold me. It goes to form my character. The great efficacy of work is shown in the Bhagavad Gita. And it is shown with such telling effect that the very attitude gets transformed. There have been so many great examples that how many people who were depressed, distressed, and were really at the end of their wits because of the problems created by work. Bhagavad Gita brought a new light to them. It is one example, I am giving an example of a Westerner, not an Indian mendicant, but a person who was employee of the East India Company, who was then ruling most of India. And this employee, his name was Clive. He became so depressed because of some difficulties in work that he decided to commit suicide. But somehow he got a translation of Bhagavad Gita to read. And that changed the whole attitude. The negative emphasis was gone. Yes, the mind was filled with tremendous sense of self-confidence. This is what Bhagavad Gita does to a person. The mind is filled with this tremendous enthusiasm and self-confidence. That is the important first condition. Religion is not feeling despondent and depressed and devoid of all enthusiasm. At times we get that impression by looking at the so-called religious or spiritual people. Their face is always a contorted face and no smile on the face, because I am religious, so how can I smile? It is the sign of some people think it is being depressed and morose makes us religious. That is exactly the situation is opposite. We have to first fill the heart with tremendous enthusiasm. So in Bhagavad Gita you find that how Arjuna, he was in the condition of that terrible depression, confusion. What to do, you don't know. One is get most depressed when you have the energy to do something. But the problem is you are not able to decide what to do. Usually we find that when we are working, most of the time and mental energy is lost. Not in working, but in deciding how to proceed, how to start. Whether I should do this first or that first, or whether this is more important or that is more important, deciding what to do makes us, you know, lose lot of time and energy. And since we cannot take the decision properly, we become really depressed. We become helpless, depressed, can't decide. Our life is pulled in various directions, so many different desires. Each of us can experience that at every moment various different tendencies are working. One is pulling in one direction, another is equally strong, and from some point of view equally desirable, that is pulling us in another direction. Now, how to actually take the decision and guide our life? When we cannot take a decision, it becomes a state of very terrible agony, as we shall see at that moment in the life of Arjuna. We began last Friday we had a video and show of revered Ranganathan and his beautiful lectures on the introductory part of Bhagavad Gita. So, but before that we stopped when we just enunciated the first verse of Bhagavad Gita, and that is by the then king who was blind, Dhritarashtra, and that blindness of the king is again symbolic. Most of these things, the war and all, are beautiful and very important symbologies. All these are wonderful symbols that we can use in our own lives. That when we refuse to acknowledge the truth, when we do not want to see the truth, then that blindness is the worst blindness. If you don't have the eyes, it is one thing. But even having the eyes or having the sense organs, when you are actually knowing something to be true, you refuse to accept that, you refuse to see it, that is the worst kind of blindness. And sometimes we fall into that kind of situation. So here is this character. We saw in Mahabharata the characters in that great epic are very similar to we people. They are not very easily, very cut and dried pieces, good and evil. Everyone is in some respect very good, but in some respect not good. So there is, in general, from the tendencies we say that the sons of Dhritarashtra, Kauravas, they are not good. And then the sons of Pandu, Pandavas, they are good. But this is only a general characterization. That should not make us conclude that in amongst these Kauravas there was no virtue at all, no good quality. And in Pandavas there was nothing bad about them. No, it is not so. So it is more or less like our representation, you know, that we have many good tendencies and we have some which are not so good. Moreover, those which are good and which are not so good are again relative. Good in relation to something, not good in relation to something else. Like when we are climbing staircase, a step is higher than its previous step, but lower than the one that is going to succeed it. So similarly, you know, one stage in our life is there where, you know, you have to think of the higher one, to climb on the higher level. That is how it is, our life has to be guided. So this is the focus of Bhagavad Gita. So the first verse that it is said, dharma kshetre kuru kshetre samaveta yuyutsavah mamakaha pandavaschaiva kima kurvata sanjaya. He asks the man sitting and seeing all those things which are happening on the battlefield. We saw that Dhritarashtra, this king, was offered by Vyasa this sight to see. But he didn't want to see and yet wanted to hear what is happening. So, therefore, Sanjaya was given, courtiers there was given this vision. You see and report. So, he asked this reporter. Probably, Sanjaya was the first reporter in this world of media. The honor of being the first reporter in the world should go to Sanjaya. He is the war reporter. So, the question was put to him that, you see that on this Dharma Kshetra, where the battle was being fought, it was a very, very holy site called Kurukshetra. So it was called Dharma Kshetra. Kurukshetra is the name of that place. And it was then also and now also it was considered to be a very holy place. Kurukshetra, that place, its history dates back before Mahabharata war, many, many centuries before Mahabharata war. This place was considered very holy. So, therefore it is termed as Dharma Kshetra. And the name was Kurukshetra, but it has again another meaning, that Kuru is means to do. You know, you do something, that is called Kuru. You do something, that is called Kuru. And do. So, the place of working, place of developing ourselves. So, that is the place, Kurukshetra, Dharma Kshetra, Kurukshetra. And all these people, all these ready to battle with each other, attack each other, these two armies have come together. Who have come? Mamakaha, my sons, you know. That is, my is always special. He doesn't say, ask the question, what Kauravas and Pandavas did? No, what my children and the sons of Pandu, are they doing there? My always occupies a very special place in our general understanding, cognition, experience and dealing. Something happens to me and mine, I am really very much pricked by it. I get alerted by it very easily. Something is happening somewhere, it doesn't matter. I told you a story some time back, I suppose, that a man was traveling in a crowded train in India And then he entered the train with his newly purchased nice bag and was always worried when he saw that somebody, he somehow got a place to stand, kept the bag somewhere, and after a while he saw that somebody is stepping on that bag. Now he had really no way at that time because of the crowd to extricate that bag. But at some next station, he had to get down. So when the station, the train stopped, he went there to pick up his bag. And to his surprise, a pleasant surprise, it wasn't his bag. It was just looked like his bag. All the tension disappeared, you know. Earlier when he was seeing that it is his bag, he was in the mind was just so unhappy. Oh look, my nice bag is now gone, it is destroyed, because it is mine. As soon as that mine is gone, he became tension free. So, this word is very significant. Dhritarashtra says, Mamakaha, he is attached to them, they are mine. When you are attached to something, naturally you see your judgments are going to be biased. So you are not allowed to serve as a jury if your own son is being charged. So it is therefore an impartiality doesn't remain in judgment if someone, yours, is involved there. So Dhritarashtra asks this question, what happened? And then Sanjaya started explaining that, look, what happened? It is these some of the verses we won't go into too much details because they are more or less narrative, very interesting narrative, but not much to explain. So Sanjaya started telling. Drishtva tu pandavanikam vyudham duryodhanastada acharyam upasangamya raja vachanam abravit. Sanjaya said, then seeing the army of the Pandavas arrayed in battle order, King Duryodhana for his part approached the teacher Drona and spoke to him the following words. Drona was the teacher of both sides, the sons of Pandu as well as the sons of Dhritarashtra. Both were taught the skills of warfare, especially the archery, by this great teacher, Drona. So he was the teacher on both sides. He loved the Pandavas because they were virtuous and good people. But he was in the employment of the Kauravas. So he was fighting on their side. And he had made it amply clear that although my heart is with them, yet I will be doing my duty. I will be performing my duty because I am in your employment. But then that doesn't mean that I cannot cheat my own conscience. My heart is with them. So therefore, now this Duryodhan approaches to him to make a sarcastic remark, to just tease him, that look at this army of our enemy, who has done all this, this arrayed by whom? Who is the general of this army? He says that Pashyaitam Panduputranam Acharya Mahatim Chamam Yudham Drupada Putrena Tava Shishena Dhimata. That this is O teacher, behold this great army of the sons of Pandu, arrayed in battle order by your talented disciple, the son of Drupada. So although you are fighting on our side, this whole army with which we are fighting, it is again your disciples' work, this wonderful, very strong, strongly arrayed army of the enemy. It is you have done that. Your student has done that. So you get the blame for this. Now we have to fight out with such strong enemy. Who made them strong? Oh, you. So it is a taunting remark actually to the teacher. And then he now is counting all the names who are there. This Duryodhana is telling, look, all those great warriors who are there. Atrashura Maheshwasa Bhimarjuna Samayudhi Yudhano Viratascha Drupadascha Maharathaha Drishtaketuscha Kitanaha Kashirajascha Viryavan Purujit Kunti Bhojascha Shaibyascha Narapungavaha. He is only now giving the names of the great warriors on the side of the Pandus, and showing that now with whom we have to fight, just see. it proceeds further the same way. Yudhamanyuscha Vikranta Uttama Ujascha Viryavan Saubhadro Draupadeyascha Sarva Eva Maharathaha. So he says that look, on their side all this greatly renowned warriors are there with whom we have to fight, you know. And now I will tell some of the great heroes in our army also. Not that only they have, we too have all such renowned warriors on our side. Let me now count them. And then, at that time, he first tells, you yourself first. It is amongst the great, if I have to count them, who is the first? Well, you are the first one. Asmakam cha visishtaye tani bodha dvijottama. Again, there is a taunt here, you know. Dvijottama means, you are after all a Brahmin. And not really, you don't belong to the warrior caste. In the Indian that caste system definitions, there is a class that just distributes, acquires and distributes knowledge. That is their function. They are teachers, therefore, of all different types of knowledge. But they are, therefore, they teach the skills of warfare also. But they do not actually participate in any war. They are not warriors. They are just earning the knowledge and distributing it. That is their job. So he is taunting him here, Dvijottama, you are after all a Brahmin, a high class Brahmin, Dvijottama. So Bhavan Bhishmascha Karnascha Krupascha Samitinjayah Ashwatthama Vikraman what is that? Ashwatthama Vikarnascha Saumadhatti Jayadratha Saumadhatti Jayadratha. I am not very conversant reading the Roman script. I have picked up a wrong copy, you see. So, it is a little confusing. So, it is. These are the different names he is giving. We don't have to go into the details of that much. Although, it is each has a particular very interesting story in Mahabharata. How they came to be the warriors in this war. There is a story associated with each of them, and very interesting story. These and many more brave men who are ready to lay down their lives for my sake, he is proudly saying, you know, Duryodhana, they are all ready to lay down their lives for my sake. So look how great I must be, you know. So they are all ready to lay down their lives for my sake. And who fight with various types of weapon are present here. All of them are seasoned warriors. And he says, though their army was numerically superior, it is said that the unit mentioned there, now there is a difference in opinion what exactly that unit represent. It is said Aukshauhini, Sanskrit word for that is used in Mahabharata is Aukshauhini. So according to some, one Aukshauhini means 10 millions. Or some say it is 1 million. So if you take it a conservative measure, 1 million, then still it is a big army. The army of Kauravas was 18 millions. And that of Pandavas was comparatively smaller. Only 11 millions. The total army was 18 millions. Kaurava's army was 11 millions and Pandava's army was 7 millions. So, total army assembled there was huge. 18 million people, warriors. So, although numerically superior is our army, he is hinting that their army is qualitatively superior. It is inadequate. He says that although numerically superior, it is not adequate to conquer this army of Pandu. Their main warrior, he is not saying here the name of Arjuna. He is saying the name of Bhima. Because, you know, the particular skill of war in which Duryodhana was proficient. On the other side, Bhima was equally proficient in using that particular weapon. That is called, it is like a mace, a big, you know, a very heavy ball at one end and a handle at the other end. So, you hold the handle and hammer. Your enemy, that was a kind of that weapon. It was called gada. The Sanskrit name for that is gada. So that is also one of the weapons in the hands of Vishnu. So Vishnu is also called Gadadhara. Gadadhara. Sri Ramakrishna had been given that name initially, that Gadadhara. So it is. That weapon is called gada, and Duryodhana and Bhima, they were equally skilled in using this particular weapon. So he says, our army is protected by Bhishma, the chief. Bhishma was the general of this army. And on the other side, the general was Drishtadyumna. Whom he said, your disciple, Drishtadyumna, the son of Drupada. But here he doesn't invoke his name. He says, who is the main protector of this army? Bhima. So he now exhorts all his generals that therefore do you all protect Bhishma, remaining in appropriate positions in your respective divisions. All of you now attend to Bhishma, what he says according to his directions. Now let us go and begin the war. And then when he said that, cheering him up, Bhishma blew his conch. And the beginning of the war, and beginning of the worship also is signaled by blowing the conch. And so you can see there is some similarity in worship and war. Both the beginning is heralded by blowing the conch. So this Bhishma, the oldest amongst the Kurus, Kuru Vriddha, oldest amongst the Kurus, sounded a lion roar loudly and blew his conch shell hard. So the war was first started from the side of the Kauravas. The battle began not from the side of the Pandavas. Even here, you see, who started blowing? It is the general of the Kauravas army who first blew the conch, signaling that here now we start the battle. And then immediately thereupon, conchs, kettle drums, tabors, these are of course the similar looking English names for those, all those different types of instruments, and the conch, all that started blowing, making a big sound. And then there are the names of the different type, who blew which conch, has been given. The narrative is, of course, again, it is very interesting to read. You know, each has some very important significance attached with it. But still, we will skip that part, because in the whole scheme, it is not that important, although interesting, that each particular warrior has a very famous conch. Their conch also was very famous, that it is their kind of particular sign. Like the famous, say, players of some instrument. They are like guitar players, they make their guitar special. That their guitar can be distinguished from the guitar of all others. So, similarly, the conch of each one was a separate one. And it had a name. So, it has been described there. And then Krishna blew on the Pandava side. It is that they blew their conch, their names are given first. Then the name of Yudhishthira comes. Then other brothers, Bhima, Nakula, Sahadeva, everybody then followed the suit, blew their conch, signaling, "Yes, we are ready now. Come on, the time to act. We have been till now talking. We were just announcing our resolves to fight. Now is the time of action. After all, the efficiency and all talking is one thing, you know. How much you can deliver is shown in action. So, I can do this, I can do that, I can do many things. Well, when it comes to action, where are you? It is good, you know, it is easy after when you are seeing maybe a baseball game. And then from that, oh, this fellow should have pitched like that. And like that, why did he pitch it like that? Fool, doesn't know how to pitch. But it is very easy to say, you go and pitch, you see. Your ball may not even reach there. So, it is very easy to talk. But when it comes to actually delivering the goods, then the character is tested there. And here we see now, it is, now the talking is finished, bragging is finished. Now it is time actually for the do or die battle. It is the Arjuna, actually all of them knew the seriousness of this battle. It is either we live or they live. It is a all-consuming, terrible war. And at the end of the war, it is really terrible. And no, not even the most modern these wars with such horrible weapons do not seem to be that destructive. Of the 18 million or whatever that unit is, of the 18 million total warriors, not even 10 survived. Think of that, you know, what a horrible battle it must have been. It is such a terrible battle. So, everybody knew that it is not a fun game that they are getting into. It is not a battle in just a jest. It is something that is real, do or die. That kind of situation is there. And now, the one who was considered the chief warrior amongst the Pandavas, the most skilled, the one in whom all this whole side of Pandavas was taking refuge in, it is that warrior was Arjuna. It is in the Mahabharata, it is described that he alone had the requisite skills to fight the great archers on the side of Kauravas. No one else. And so this warrior now, everybody is looking at him. Arjuna. What Arjuna is now going to do? What happened to this Arjuna then? He said to Krishna, it is now this Arjuna sees, O king, this Sanjaya is describing and the description is going on. O king, Arjuna, the Pandava leader with the banner crest of monkey, on seeing the followers of Dhritarashtra arrayed for battle and the clash of weapons about to start, held up his bow and said the following words to Sri Krishna. He is now ready for action, seemingly, but not ready inside. When we make some very big resolves in life, which we know will have very far-reaching effects, and we may have to give up many, many things that we like, we love. It is at that point, although we have made the resolve, the mind starts shaking. Should I do or should I not do? It is that kind of situation one faces when we have to take that decision. We have thought a lot. We are sometimes very good thinkers. Think from all sides and take decision. But when it is now is the moment to implement that decision in practice, the mind starts shivering in fear, becomes very weak and tries to find out some way of escaping one's decision. It is a terrible state. You know that this is right, and yet the cowardice takes over and you feel you shouldn't take such a drastic step. You know you should do it on the one hand, but on the other hand, the cowardice in you tells, no, wait, think again. When you have thought everything and yet the mind tells, think again, that is the sure sign of cowardice. You have thought from all sides, taken a decision. It is now time for action, and the sand under your feet seems shifting. You get that knees start having that jerky action. You are trembling with fear. What to do, you are not able to decide. And then you think, wait, let me think. It is not thinking then. It is a coward trying to avoid action. A coward trying to escape the actual action on a judiciously taken decision. And this is how our life, you know, has to deal with these problems all the time. And some decisions are not that momentous, so we don't feel much about them. But imagine when you have to, you know, take a course that may alter your life, and you have thought about it, you know what is right, and yet you are not able to make your heart to take up that resolve, put it into action. So this is the situation of Arjuna, and he was very intelligent. We are also very intelligent. None of us lack intelligence, you know. Very sharp intelligence we have, all of us have. Intelligence we do not lack. But sometimes we do not judiciously implement or use that intelligence. We use it in self-destruction. The intelligence becomes a weapon in the hands of cowards, the coward inside us. And we want to run away from the decision. But we do not want people to think that we are cowards. We are cowards, but we still want to sport as brave thinking people, you know. We are brave, but we are thoughtful. So, you start thinking about what you have thought. That thought is now how to present this picture, so that people will, I will not be subjected to criticism. I will not be subjected to ridicule. So, we try to, you know, present our decision in a very philosophic way, so that people will think good about me. So, Arjuna is now, you know, telling Krishna that he is still in a kind of state of indecision. So, in that state, he tells Krishna, Arjuna uvacha, thus spake Arjuna, senayor ubhayor madhye ratham sthapayame chuta yavadeta nirikshaham yodhukamanavasthitam kairmayasah yodhavyam asmin ranasamudyame. O Achyuta, that is the name, one name of Krishna. That Achyuta means, literally, etymologically, it means that immovable. Oh, immovable, but now he is a charioteer, so he has to, relatively, he has to move, you see. Oh, Achyuta, please station my chariot between the two armies, so that I may have a view on the eve of this battle of all those standing ready to fight, and learn who all are the persons with whom I have to contend. Let me see all those who have arrived to favor the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra in war and are standing ready to join battle. Many commentators have remarked that this is the sign of this sign of weakness in Arjuna. It is when he is telling, put the chariot right in between so that I will be able to see with whom I have to fight. As if he didn't know earlier with whom to fight. This was just an excuse, you see, he was buying time. So, postponing. Let me take some more time. So, now are the weapons, it is said, pravritte shastra sampate, the weapons have been unsheathed. So there is really not much time now. So he is buying the time. Krishna, take the chariot in between the two armies, so that let me see with whom I have to fight. As if Arjuna didn't know with whom to fight. He knew with whom to fight. Earlier, when those very people were told by him in very strong words that be ready now to be killed by my sharp arrows. All those evil acts you have committed, now the retribution will be coming from my arrows. Be ready. He was not even ready to let Krishna go. To have some negotiations. That what is the use? They won't understand any language of negotiation. They will understand the language of my arrows. That Arjuna, remember that Arjuna, who was full of that anger towards Kauravas, the idea of teaching them a good lesson, and also avenging all those evils that they had done to them, all that was topmost in his mind. That Arjuna fully knew with whom he is going to fight. That Arjuna now stands. Shri Krishna is not talking. Guru does not talk, you know, till you express a problem, you want to learn, and till then this Guru is quiet. You know, Shri Krishna is charioteer. He is not there an independent person where the one who is sitting in it tells, he is like a chauffeur. Chauffeur takes you where you want to go. Arjuna told, hey, take me there. Krishna, okay, let me. And took him there, right there. And now, whom Arjuna sees in the war there, he said, let me see. Whom I am going to fight. And what does Arjuna see there? Beautiful description in Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna does not see a single enemy there. Nobody worth fighting with. Nobody. Because that same I and mine, all his eyes, the mental eyes were covered with that tremendous attachment. On the other side, what does he see? The language that Vyasa has used here is very beautiful language. Very penetratively it tells the state of the mind of Arjuna that he is now not seeing the warriors on opposite side, but all mine. My uncles, my brothers, my grandparent, my teacher, my so-and-so, my so-and-so, everything is all mine now. How now the fighting is going to be possible? Sri Ramakrishna used to say, I and mine is Maya, is ignorance. What is Maya? That we all say that we have to get rid of Maya and become free. That is knowledge. We have to get rid of all Maya. What is Maya? I and mine. And that prevents you to implement the right decision that you take. It tells you, no, rethink. It makes you coward. Now there is no rethinking. In Sanskrit, one commentary nicely says, you know, it is difficult because there is some this thing about language. It cannot be exactly translated. That it is said that Arjuna wants time for vichar. Arjuna thinks that I am doing vichar, means thinking. But the commentator says here that it is actually vikar. In the garb of vichar, there is no vichar. Vikar means a weakness or a lacuna. morbidity is called vikar. This morbidity has taken on the garb of thinking. No thinking is going on really. Wants now a route for what they call a prestigious escape, you know, beating, a prestigious retreat. So you have lost, but you don't admit that there. Oh, no, we did not lose. It was a strategic retreat, you see. Arjuna wants to now present, philosophize the weakness. That is the bane of we intelligent people. That instead of trying to overcome the weakness, we philosophize the weakness, justify it, say that what we are doing is right. It comes to all of us, friends, when we are attacked by our attachments. And instead of saying that it is because of my attachment I am doing it, I philosophize it. I say, no, this is right. And my attachment is therefore then called my love. And it sounds then very nice. My weakness, instead of calling it my weakness, I call it, this is my compassion. What compassion? You know what the truth is, but then you project the things in a different way. Human beings use intelligence like that. So anyway, we shall discuss all that Arjuna state. It is described really so beautifully. In fact, we hurried through this description, but those of you who have time, please read through any good translation and commentary that, and think about it, you see, the state of the mind of Arjuna and how the war was taking place there. So, then we will get a clear idea that in what state this wonderful advice is being given. So, any questions? Yes, please. Yes, actually that is true. Our own minds take the decisions. The thing is, when indecisiveness comes because of the various different pulls, not that we do not have enough intelligence. We have enough intelligence, but then there are two reverse pulls acting. And so, these two pulls are described in the scriptures. Broadly classified that one pull is towards your ideal or towards your real good. Other pull is towards what you are attached and what you like. Your likings and attachments, they are pulling you in one direction, and your ideal is pulling you in other direction. So therefore, although when you are in your sane moments, you think that you should follow the path of the ideal. Yet, when you want to implement it, I and mine kind of overtakes. So that is the state of Arjuna's mind. Therefore, one becomes indecisive.
So can you say it's almost like our unright ego and right ego?
In a way, yes, you can say like that. Yeah, you can say like that. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. And tomorrow, as you know, we will be having a day-long spiritual retreat. So, and the morning, our meditation, guided meditation and all that program will not be there. Of course, those of you who have signed up for the retreat or want to sign up for the retreat, they are welcome for the all the programs. So and then the that morning cleaning and all that also will not take place tomorrow.
Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarai Yasvayam Padmanabhasya Mukha Padmadvinisrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantraha Tasya Namaniyani Karmapyekam Tasya Devasya Seva Shri Krishna Arpanamastu.